And go ahead and begin, and you remember where you left off from last. I guess we're starting anew, aren't we? Okay. Why don't you just go right ahead then?
Mr. Chair, members, just a note. I handed out again the Legislative Fiscal Office overview of materials having to do with the agency, and also attached is a copy of the subcommittee priority listing that was done, which when the time comes we need to walk through with the agency. And with that, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lynn Beaton, and I'm the manager of the Central Operations Division for the department. And I'm sure we will all be pleased that we have come to the end of describing the different programs within the department. And today we're going to finish with the operations program unit and explain how that budget works. In this case, we do think it's going to be useful to you to use this handout and follow along, because in talking about budgets, we're finding that our lovely pie charts and other charts and tables help make it a little bit easier to follow where we are. So turning to page 2, or 1, in this document, and the first pie chart. This pie chart breaks out all of the different funds under the department, and specifically the light part to the right that's pulled out and labeled operations. This is what we're going to be talking about today. And very specifically, the operations portion of the pie covers two things. First, it covers staff salaries and staff-related costs, which include things like PERS, workers' comp, medical insurance. Second, this budget covers other operational costs for the department, including AG costs, travel, and professional services. So you've asked where you can find the funding that describes the different divisions and how we fund staff internally. This is the answer to that question. And if you go to the second pie chart, which is on page 2, you'll see that we've split out these operational costs by all the divisions. So in earlier hearings, Representative Richardson specifically had asked us about things like, where do you find the operational costs for the international division? You're going to see in this pie chart that this is where each of those six divisions are laid out and explained. You've also asked us a question earlier about why don't we charge administrative costs against individual funds. We actually do that for three groups of programs. We don't do it for lottery-funded programs, but we do for business finance programs. We charge directly for staff time against those programs. We do it for our infrastructure programs, such as Special Public Works and Water Wastewater, because they are other fund programs and they involve bonding. And third, we direct charge for federally funded programs. And that includes things like our Safe Drinking Water Program, the Community Development Block Grant Program, brownfields, and old growth. So, for example, in those three cases, we will charge the way an attorney would or an accountant, which is as different staff put in time on those projects, they're directly funded against those programs, but not for lottery programs.
And Ms. Beaton, just a moment. Yeah. Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the questions that I have, Ms. Beaton, and I don't have my materials coming down from my office right now, but I noticed on one of the spreadsheets that you provided us, it showed attorney's fees. It didn't list the project with the listing of the attorney's fees, but it was $400,000 in attorney's fees. First of all, what kind of attorney's fees would you incur at that level? Secondly, how would you spread those?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I don't have the direct information on dollars and attorney fees, but I can get that to you. But generally speaking, we will incur attorney fees whenever we have funds over specific dollar amounts. They automatically have to go to the Attorney General's office to be reviewed. Also, we do that for all of our business finance programs and many of the Strategic Reserve Fund programs, the industry sector outreach, and the infrastructure programs all need to go to the Attorney General's office for final review. So, again, I can get that specific list to you, but it's a lot of programs that have to go there.
I do want to be more specific, and I'll get the exact line item. The thing that struck me was it's a private law firm. It isn't the AG.
Preston Gates.
It was Preston Gates. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, the private law firm is for the industrial revenue bonds and our bonding programs, which we're required to hire bond counsel to review those.
Okay. There was one other listing specifically for bond counsel, and the $400,000 to the Gates firm, Preston Gates firm, was not identified with any program, and I was just... Then do you spread those, or how do you treat those costs? Do they stay in the bonding program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I believe that they do, and I apologize for not knowing the answer off the top of my head. I will have to get back to you on that. I apologize.
Thanks. Ms. Beaton, our real chair is back now, but I wanted to clarify just for the record, in case folks are listening, that we gaveled in for the public hearing regarding Senate Bill 5508.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, continuing... To sort of summarize then for the operational budget by division, within the operational budget, again, we include all those staffing and related costs for all the staff in the agency. So that's where you're going to find all staff recorded. As a separate issue, I actually manage the central operations division, which includes about 32 FTE right now and is a portion of the agency's program. What the Central Operations Division specifically does is to provide internal support to the rest of the department. And if you turned to page 3 of your handouts, you will see the list of the project types that Central Services handles and manages. Specifically, this includes things like budget management, fiscal management, performance measures, facilities management, and contracts development. And I want to talk specifically about the contract staff because contracts has been raised as an issue in earlier days of testimony. We are working to include or improve the timeline by which we issue contracts. Over the last year or so, it has taken us too long to get contracts out the door, and we want to fix that. Specifically, following last session, we were reduced from 5 people to 2 in our contracts division, and that has substantially slowed things down. So given that contracts are such a priority, we have reorganized staff internally so that we can assign again 3 FTE in addition to the contracts unit.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duncan. Just to make sure that I can follow you, what exactly are the full responsibilities for your contract unit? Are they, and here's what I'm getting at, are they both writing the contracts, and where's the AG oversight come in, and given the number of contracts that you deal with, talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, our contracts unit has worked with the professional program staff and the AG's office to draft boilerplates for most of our types of contracts. However, each contract will sometimes raise somewhat different issues that we need to address individually. Our contracts folks are able to review those contracts and for the most part to say, okay, what the AG's office has directed us to do in the past is X, Y, or Z, and to make that make those changes.
But does the AG sign off on all your contracts at some level, whether they sign off blanket on the boilerplate or they review the one-off contracts? Has an AG lawyer looked at all of them?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, they don't look at every contract. Some that are under specific dollar amounts are not reviewed by the AG's office individually. But again, you are correct in that initially the boilerplate for those types of contracts was reviewed. So there has been some AG review of all of those contracts, although not every one is looked at. Does that answer the question?
If the chair will indulge, one last follow-up. Did Oregon Economic and Community Development get special dispensation to not have complete AG review of all contracts? I mean, it was my understanding that agencies had contracts reviewed. And I don't know where your dollar amount cutoff is, but...
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, no, we're not unique in this. For each agency, or for many agencies, I should say, but including us, we are exempted from having to go back to the AG's office under a specific dollar amount. I believe it's $75,000. I will need to check that and get back to you, but that's not a condition that's unique to our department.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. So with that, I've actually, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, concluded the comments about our operational budget and the contracts division in general. But I did want to respond to some of the questions that we've heard in earlier days and try to give you some answers. Specifically, we are still gathering information on the request concerning all contractors and subcontractors. For some of the subcontractors, we might have to give you a general description, because otherwise we're going back to hundreds of folks that we've given contracts to.
How do you do? It's going to be tricky for you.
Mr. Chair, that's true. That's why it's taking us a few days.
Let me play through this. You may have subcontractors I don't know how you're going to do that. I mean, I understand the concept of this, and I understand where we're going with this, and I want you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you effectively could be going to subs of companies. You could be going to regional rural investment, to strategic reserve subs.
Mm-hmm.
When Senator Johnson comes in here, maybe we could help you clarify, because I don't. We'll have to think through that.
Well, Mr. Chair, let me give you an example. You're quite right. Really going back to each contractor and learning the subcontractors would be way too time consuming. So what we are doing for some groups of contracts, for example, the Special Public Works Fund, we know that when we give money to those communities, they're generally working with infrastructure projects involving water, wastewater, et cetera. So we've given you the general category of subcontractors would include engineers, construction firms, et cetera. So for funds like that, we've given you the general idea of who the subcontractors would be. Okay. But in some cases, we do know the direct subcontractors, and there we're listing them out.
Perfect.
So we're kind of doing the best we can with that, but you're right. You won't have the detail on each specific contract. Okay?
Okay.
Second question that we wanted to respond to yesterday, Senator Johnson asked us about the Burns Heliport infrastructure project. In the materials that we provided you today, we've given you the brief background on that project in response to the question. Also, we have provided you today a one-page fact sheet on the operations division. On the back side of that, it shows you the detail for each division on the staffing costs, again, including salary and other related costs that are incurred by those individual divisions. And finally, I wanted to answer the question that was raised yesterday about audits. The department has three types of auditor groups. First, we can be audited by federal agencies because of the federal funds that we manage. The Environmental Protection Agency has a fairly consistent pattern in which they audit us. Some of the other federal agencies do not, but bottom line is we are frequently audited by federal agencies to manage those funds. Second, the Secretary of State performs regular audits on the department. Specifically, statute requires that they perform an annual audit on any programs that involve the Oregon Bond Bank. So that includes the Special Public Works Fund and the Water Waste Fund. That audit is once a year. In fact, we've just finished it for this year, and I do have copies of the report. And luckily, it says there were no material problems with how the agency is managing those contracts.
There was a line item in that budget. I think it's $380,000. Can you go to the expense section on that?
Sorry, Mr. Chair, on which?
In the audit. In the Secretary of State audit.
Audit?
Yeah, I think that just posted with the Secretary of State. There's $380,000 that went to the governor's office. Do you know what that was for?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do. Specifically, that was our department's percentage of funding the ERT, the Economic Revitalization Team.
Okay. Thank you.
And finally, the third type of an auditor that we can have is an internal auditor. And we have had an internal auditor. In fact, one of the questions that was raised in earlier testimony was to please provide any reports from that auditor. We have provided those in your Phase 2 packets under the operational tab. You'll find all those reports.
How often do the internal auditors complete reports? They do it on a quarterly basis?
No, Mr. Chair, we're actually fairly new to hiring internal auditors. A lot more agencies are starting to do that. And our auditor just left and took another position in January. So what we've really decided to do, to be honest, is to audit or to contract for an auditor in the future so that we can use that auditor position as part of the contracts, folks. But the auditor that we did have for approximately a year met quarterly with the audits committee and provided updates and information. And so what you're seeing in the packet are those quarterly reports that we received from him when he audited us.
Part of the reason I think the audits question came up, and this came up earlier today in Chair Johnson's subcommittee, was we're trying to make sure that there's adequate controls in place for those folks who have cash handling responsibilities, check handling responsibilities, or check disbursement capabilities. And I know that no responsibility of anyone here, but that was an issue in the department 36 months ago, somewhere like that. And so I think part of what we're trying to do is make sure that you folks have put procedures in place to protect yourself and to protect taxpayers.
Chair Smith, we are acutely aware of that, and you are quite right. And frankly, that's one of the questions that we have put to both our internal auditor when we had him and the Secretary of State auditors is we don't want to be in trouble again. We want to make sure that things are handled properly. We have definitely put new controls into place. And when the divisions were reorganized a couple of years ago, that was one of the priorities, was to make sure that we have redundancy so that we're really checking. And so far, it seems to be working much better, but we are very cognizant of that. Yes.
Thank you.
Finally, I believe, Mr. Chair, that Senator Morse asked yesterday about performance audits or financial audits. Both types of audits are performed. Specifically, the Secretary of State and the internal auditor have conducted performance audits on the department, really looking at the criteria for how we manage our programs to ensure that we're actually meeting that criteria. And the Secretary of State and the federal auditors conduct financial audits and look at the dollars and where the money's going and how we manage that. So we are getting audits on both performance audit and financial audit basis for the department.
Question, Mr. Chair?
Senator Morris.
Thank you for responding to my question yesterday. Do we have any ongoing performance audits and pending results?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, right now, as I just held up just a minute ago, let me hold it again for some of you. This is a report we just literally received this last week from the Secretary of State. It includes both financial and performance audit information. And our internal auditor, who, again, that position's been vacant for a few months, but before he left, provided us with a few performance audits. So we have that information, which is also in your book.
Thank you.
Finally, Mr. Chair, also a question was asked much earlier in Phase 1 concerning the work plans for the department through the years. And we have provided you with quite a collection of those going back to 1995. We've tried to give you a summary of each of those work plans. You will also find those in your book under the operational tab if you'd like to take a look at those. And with that, I think I will conclude simply by asking the department recommends funding at the same service level that we have during this current biennium, and we request that you adopt the governor's recommended budget for the operations budget. Thank you.
Really quick, I ask this of everyone. This committee went through an exercise of prioritizing program areas. Is there anything you'd want to share with us that we missed in the prioritization of those program areas?
Chair Smith, I believe that Marty Brantley will be handling that or answering that question directly in a few minutes, but I think generally speaking, it's fair to say that our biggest concern was with the Industry Sector Outreach Fund. We know that we didn't really get a chance to fully explain that in Phase 1, and that was seen to be reflected by the priority, which was low, that you gave that fund. So we're now hoping that you maybe have more information about the fund and would move that up as a higher priority.
I gave it a low.
Mr. Chair, I don't remember what you specifically did.
Oh, I thought
did.
You just said I gave it a low.
The committee, Mr. Chair.
Bakken.
That's true.
I was fighting for it.
We appreciate that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cora.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cora Parker. I'm from the Budget and Management Division of the Department of Administrative Services. You actually have two copies of my presentation. You had an original copy from the very first day of testimony, and the department actually today was kind enough to provide you a second copy that is included within their handout. So you can continue, I think, on page 4 of the materials that were provided today, and you'll see a copy of my presentation. Starting on page 5 of that document, you see a slide that is intended to provide some program area context with respect to the state's roughly $42 billion total fund state budget. The Economic and Community Development Program area includes approximately $5.3 billion total funds expenditure limitation, and the department makes up approximately 9% of that with $488.3 million total funds. Again, on page 6, for context, the state's total general fund and lottery funds budget, as proposed in the governor's recommended budget for 05-07, is roughly $11.9 billion. The Economic and Community Development Program area makes up just $136.9 million of that budget, and a very small portion of that is general fund. Most of that is lottery funds within this program area. OECDD enjoys the largest share of that general fund and lottery fund budget with $111.1 million or 81% of the pie, and again, the bulk of that is in lottery funds rather than general fund. The department's budget falls primarily into the governor's principle related to economic development. That is, Oregon has a positive business climate and invests in economic development in order to create and retain sustainable businesses and family wage jobs. Page 8 outlines the department's expenditures by fund type. You'll note that the general fund makes up a very small portion of the department's budget, and that is entirely contained within the Arts Commission budget. Other funds and federal funds are also a relatively smaller portion of the department's budget. These are program-specific funds, with federal funds including largely the Community Development Block Grant that you heard about, I believe, late last week. I'll return to lottery in a minute, but if you know, the largest portion of the department's budget is in other funds non-limited. That primarily represents revolving loan activity for a number of the funds that we discussed over the last few days. Revenue sources include both loan repayments on previous activity as well as bond proceeds, both lottery bond proceeds and revenue bond bank proceeds. An example of that revolving loan activity, and I'm going to use a very simple example, so excuse me and forgive me if I oversimplify this, but just to bring context again to the need for the non-limited activity. If, for example, in the first year of the biennium, we loan out $1 to program recipient A, that, depending on the nature of the loan, they could be paying part of that dollar back within 2 months, 5 months, 12 months, depending on the nature of the loan. As soon as they've paid that portion of the loan back, that's part of that same original dollar that's back in the fund again and available to go back out the door again. So the nature of that non-limited fund is especially important when you've got a revolving loan fund activity like you see here in the department. With respect to lottery funds, they make up the second largest portion of the department's budget. The number represented here includes both new lottery allocation proposed in the governor's recommended budget as well as carry-forward lottery funds. And I think we had some discussion of this earlier in the week, but I want to just provide another example here. Carry-forward funds are primarily focused in the strategic reserve fund. These represent funds that were available for award or allocation in the current biennium, the 03-05 biennium, but are not actually anticipated to be expended out of the department's budget until the 05-07 biennium. For example, and again, I'm going to just make up a very simplistic example, so forgive me if it's oversimplistic. Midway through the 03-05 biennium, a strategic reserve fund award is made to a company. Let's say it's for workforce training. Typically, that sort of award wouldn't be necessary to be drawn down as a cash award by the receiving entity until they've actually come to Oregon, they've located, they've built or expanded the building they're in, and they've hired their employees and started operations, or right before the beginning to hire their employees. that, if it was a midway through the biennium award, may not actually need to be expended as far as cash out the door goes until somewhat down the road and likely into the 05-07 biennium. So that just, to draw importance to that, depending on the types of awards that are going out the door and the companies that are coming in any given point in time, if you don't allow the flexibility to use that carry forward process, you may actually need to diminish some of the award activity towards the end of a particular biennium. For example, awards during, say, the legislative process from the Strategic Reserve Fund may need to be cut back because it's likely that anything being awarded right now wouldn't actually go out the door until the following biennium.
So help this committee, Cora. If we are trying to track the impact of that money and to make sure that we weren't just spending it at the end, mm-hmm. what type of question should we be asking? How much money was committed in the last 6 months?
Mr. Chair, actually, and the department can weigh in on this, I think my response would be that under the mechanism that we have set up right now, which allows the expenditure to be carried forward into a subsequent biennium, but the award activity to continue on in the normal course of business, there's not a need for the department to be forcing awards out in any sort of unnatural pattern in that last six-month period, because they're allowed to carry them forward as far as the expenditure goes into the next biennium. Now, if, for example, we were to change that methodology and we were to say, you're not allowed to carry forward anything, any of those funds anymore, you may see the sort of activity that you're talking about, or you may see, as I mentioned, a diminishment of award of activities in the first place because there's uncertainty about the level of strategic reserve funding in the next biennium. So I don't think that's an issue under the current mechanism that we have in place. The department is awarding funds based on the level of allocation in the current biennium. That's where the performance measures are drawn back to, and it's simply the actual cash expenditure that's being carried forward to the next biennium.
It is. One of the misperceptions I've heard, and I underline myths mm-hmm. on misperceptions, is that the department in the last two quarters is having to spend this money or to commit it because they don't want to come before this committee knowing that they're going to be asking for more strategic reserve, knowing that there may be dollars that aren't committed, and thereby raising the question of why would we put extra money in there,
certainly.
Knowing that you didn't spend what was available in the last biennium. And,
certainly.
And I think it's important for this committee to understand
how that works. And Mr. Chair, it's certainly one of the questions during the budget development process that I asked, yes. Because if midway through the biennium, we've only allocated, you know, a million of a $10 million pot, for example, then you're certainly going to say, what's going on here? So it certainly is an important question. It's something that the committee should pay attention to. But I don't think that there's necessarily a push, per se, to get dollars out the door that wouldn't otherwise have gone out the door. The department still has some pretty stringent parameters as far as how they award funds. So.
Right.
Okay. Moving on to page 9, this outlines the department's budget by program units. You're going to see this chart a couple of different times today. You've already seen it once when Lynn was speaking. She talked to you about the operations budget, which makes up approximately 5% of the department's budget. Just for your context, this is the level at which you will see dollars in the appropriation bill that will come before you. We have an operations division line item, a community development fund line item, film and video, arts commission, and then lottery debt service. So this is the budgetary level that you're actually looking at and reviewing. And we'll talk about some of that more detailed level that's underneath of that when we get to Deanne's presentation later today.
So really quick on the lottery debt service of $53 million, mm-hmm. would that then, if we take page 9 and correlate that back to page 8, uh-huh. would that then be limited funds under those lottery funds?
Mr. Chair, on page 8, that $53 million is part of the $109 million lottery
fund. And those would be considered limited.
Yes. Actually, Mr. Chair, all lottery funds are considered limited. The only funds within the state that are considered non-limited are, for the most part, other funds, and I think there may be some federal funds that are considered non-limited. But both general fund appropriations and lottery funds are all considered limited.
By their definition.
Correct.
Thank you.
Again, on page 9, Film and Video and the Arts Commission are separate program units for budgetary or appropriation purposes, and they make up approximately 2% of the department's budget combined. The Lottery Debt Service Program, again, another appropriation level, reflects lottery allocation or expenditure limitation necessary to pay debt service both on outstanding and on newly proposed lottery bonds. This is a growing part of the agency's budget, as you'll note. The Oregon Development Fund, or the Community Development Fund as it's referenced in statute, is the largest budgetary program unit, and again, Deanne Chandler is going to speak about this in some more detail in a few minutes.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Could I ask you, on the film and video, even though it shows it's very, very small part of your budget, when they made their report the other day, those numbers were quite big in what they gave us as far as the impact back. And if I'm not mistaken, are there just two or three FTE in that office?
Mr. Chair and Senator Verger, actually, the Film and Video Office is not a state entity per se. It is a pass-through element of the department's budget, so there are no state FTE that are in that budget. My understanding, however, is that there is a very limited amount of persons that are working in that particular office right now. I think it's more than two. But I'd say it's definitely less than 10.
Yeah.
I can say that for certain. And I think they have done, not to, you know, sing their praises, but I think they have done a considerable job with the funds that have been passed through to them over the last few years. And the pass through to them has shrunk, along with some, or shrunk as a percentage at least, along with budget cuts, et cetera. So.
Okay. Could you follow up, Mr.
Please.
Chair? Could you explain to me what $841,605 is used for if they're not a state agency?
Mr. Chair and Senator Verger, with respect to the state's budget, that simply is a one-time special fund payment or special payment out of the department's budget to the Film and Video Commissioner, Film and Video Office. They use those funds to leverage their other operating funds. So it would be used to pay their personnel costs and other operational costs.
I see.
But they're not on the state's budget. They're not state employees. They're not state FTE. They're a separate entity that we simply have a pass-through budget related to them.
Okay. All right.
Follow up or?
Well, I'm not sure I understand that, but I won't follow up now. I'll just leave that.
Let me take another crack at it here, Mr. Chair and Senator Verger. I'm trying to think of a good example. You've had a number of agencies, or not agencies, but of entities that have come and sat before you in the last few days that receive department funds that are not part of the department, and yet they are carrying out certain elements of, you know, economic development business per se in the state. They may have FTE, for example, or personnel, but they're not department personnel. This is a slightly more formal relationship than some of the relationships that have been brought forward to you today. But the employees are not State of Oregon employees. We simply have a relationship, and it's a fairly long-standing relationship with the Film and Video Office, that they continue to be a part of the department's budget. They're looked at as a line item like anything else. Frankly, if at some point in time we determined that they didn't have the outstanding return on investment that they obviously do and that they've been speaking about, we could cut them just like any other element of the department's budget. So,
I do have one other question, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind. Do you know what part of their total budget you participate in? what percentage of does this represent?
Mr. Chair and Senator Verger, at one point in time I did, and with rather than putting out a number that's not absolutely correct, I'll verify for that, verify that for you, and we'll get back to you. I apologize for not having it on the tip of my tongue.
Okay.
My understanding is a fairly large percentage.
Cora, explain for the committee really quick on page the difference on page 9 and 10. On page 9, operations of $26 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then on page 10, high personnel services and services and supplies are $31 million. There's a that difference.
Mr. Chair, on page 6, you have the slice by division, and you'll note that the film and video division, which we were just talking about, and the Arts Commission are separate program units. When you slice it by budget category, those personnel expenses that are within the Arts Commission, for example, are reflected in that larger number. So they're not operations division costs, but they are personnel costs of the division that are reflected here. And the same for services and supplies costs.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think we're on page 10. This outlines the economic development budget by category of spending. Again, personal services.
Senator Johnson.
I think I jumped the gun. You were about to get to the descriptions. I'll wait until you say it.
Okay. Personal services spending represents approximately 4% in the department's budget, with services and supplies at 3% just behind that. Debt service, both for lottery funds and other department-issued bonds, makes up approximately 20% of the department's budget. And again, the largest portion of the department's budget here is represented as special payments. That includes both grant and loan or award activity and the other program activity that we've talked about throughout the last week or so.
Senator Johnson.
Now, the services and supplies number seems inordinately high. And I'm sure that in the time we've all spent together that somebody has explained that. Seeing it in this graphic presentation just drives it home. Can you offer any insight into why that should be so hard? Should I turn to Ms. Beaton and say, could you help us?
I don't have any specific insight.
You can turn to Ms. Beaton,
Mr.
If
Chair.
You'd like.
Fabulous.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, that services and supplies dollar amount includes things for us like professional services, our travel budget, telecommunications or phone bills, attorney general costs, dues and subscriptions, expendable property. So it's quite a litany of different activities that are covered under that dollar amount.
Would you be kind enough, with the chair's leave, to break that out and to bring it back to us?
I can
just the way that you did it.
Okay.
Travel, professional services, just exactly the way you did it. So we have it all in one place. I know that somewhere if a guy went spelunking through these books, one could find these numbers all over the place. But if you'd bring them back in a single format, that would be great.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I'm looking at so that I can do that for you by tomorrow. Deanne has pointed out I should clarify this also includes arts. So that's another reason that number's a little larger. It's not just the actual department budget, but it's also the arts budget. I will do that, and we will provide that to you tomorrow.
And, Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I believe one thing that we'll find likely inflates this, as I was trying to think through the categories within here, cost of issuance for bonding programs typically are included as other service and supplies costs. And when you're talking about you're talking about a $60 million, for example, new bond, cost of issuance on that, I'm guessing, is probably in the $1 million, $1.5 million range. So those sorts of things will also appear to inflate that services and supplies budget as a percentage.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're the chair.
I'm sorry. You've got more down at that end, senators? Senator Morris, go ahead. I thought Senator Johnson had just taken over running the meeting. You were doing so well. Senator Morris, please. Well,
I do have an additional question, and I'm sure that part of this is, not getting all the information out of the Orbitz data, but we have services and supplies under operations budgeted for 2003-05 at $8,496,710,
And it's an interesting number because that then rolls up into the 0507 budget of $8,496,710. $8,496,710. The exact same number budgeted from one time period, from one biennium to the next. And then the forecast for the 0305 ending, which I assume is under the estimate, Robin, would be $6,456,702, which is substantially less than what is budgeted.
What page are you on?
Page 265 under operation.
Mr. Chair and Senator Morse, actually the same person right now. I'm just taking a guess here at the document that you're looking at. I'm assuming that you're starting that you're looking at a document that starts with 0103 actuals, works across to ledge adopted or ledge approved, has 0305 estimates, and then an 0305 base budget. That base budget actually is not the governor's recommended budget. There are some additional columns that move forward after that, including essential budget level and then the governor's recommended budget. So if you look at any given agency, services and...
265, I'm going to give her the book so she...
I did a good job of guessing even with that. Services and supplies for that base level, which is a specific column, are going to look like they're exactly the same for the most part as what was adopted in ledge adopted. It's then when you roll the essential packages on top of that, phase in, phase outs, etc., which are on a totally different display for you, that you actually roll up into taking out programs that should have been phased out or programs that should be phased in, rolling up policy packages, etc., on top of that. One of the things that hit here and would have actually resulted in that reduction, I think, that you talk about for the governor's recommended level or the essential budget level would have been the rollout of a service and supply category for pension obligation bonds. I think you've been hit a couple times with pension obligation bonds were originally budgeted as a services and supplies cost based on agreements with the federal government and whether or not those would be reimbursable. You now see those in personal service costs. But the specific document that you're looking at is only one part of the story. So that last column where it says 2005-07 base, that is not reflective of what is actually the governor's recommended budget level. There's another document with mm-hmm. four or five columns that gets you up to that level.
Okay, let's follow up. Of course, Mr. Chairman, and to bring you up to date, we're on page 265 of the under operations. My question would be, under the 0305 adopted budget, legislatively adopted mm-hmm. budget, was that in fact the services and supplies budget for 0305 of $8,496,710?
Mm-hmm. And Senator Morse, yes, that should have been the 0305 adopted budget. Yes.
Okay. And then the follow-up question is then, that budget now, for all the adjustments, the ins and outs and additions mostly, obviously, that now is up to $13,076,228. So that's what we're comparing?
No. One clarification.
Previously explained,
it's not. You're just looking at operations. Right. In addition to operations, you would have the Oregon Development Fund issuance costs. You would have the Arts Commission. You would have other costs in there. So no, it's not a matter of the operations services and supplies budget doubling. You'd have to go and look at what the base was for all of the other areas as well.
Right. Okay, I think we are on to page 11. Page 11 outlines the department's recent budget history, and you'll note that the department...
I'm going to have a segment one more time back. Can we, back on page 10, when we were talking about services and supplies and personnel services, mm-hmm. there was discussion about the Attorney General.
Mm-hmm.
Can you assure me that we're not overly using the Attorney General on contracts
Mr. Chair, we have used the Attorney General's office quite a bit in the last two biennia because we've had different programs coming to the department for which we're responsible. And so we wanted to make sure that we were really following the correct legal requirements. In truth, our Attorney General bill is often fairly high because of all the contracts we manage and the need to have those reviewed to make sure that they meet legal sufficiency requirements.
Do you have boilerplate contracts, though, that are being sent to the AG's office?
Mr. Chair, we do have boilerplates for some of our programs, but again, some of the contracts that we've been drafting most recently are new to us and are required. We had changes that were required following last session. For example, the regional rural contracts changed, the community assistance contracts changed, and then we had new contracts to support the industrial lands program.
Let me be clear here, though. You're not having every one of the region's contracts reviewed. You're just having the boilerplate reviewed.
Mr. Chair, we do start with a boilerplate that is reviewed by the AG's office, but to be honest with you, actually I can remember this, some of them I believe do go to the AG's office because of the dollar amount involved again and the requirement that over a specific dollar amount we need to send it to the Attorney General.
Statutory?
Yes.
Requirements?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair, correct.
Have you heard this concern from the regions and from people around the state that the AG's office is causing the delay in getting some of this stuff out?
Mr. Chair, we've heard concerns about everyone causing delay in getting contracts out. And it's true that we really have one primary AG who works with the department. He's extremely good, but he's trying to do a lot. And then a second who helps review the infrastructure programs. They're not usually a slow point, to be honest, but because of the new contracts, it has been somewhat slower than in the past. Again, I need to take some of the responsibility for the timeline and that we didn't have enough contracts people for at least a year and a half. But I think we've now fixed that. The third reason that I think we've been a little slower with some of those contracts is that regional boards have had to review the contracts themselves. It's a different process for them. And our community development staff have had to review them, and it's been new for them as well. So because it's been a new process and new contracts, I think it's taken some time from all the players to make sure we've got the contracts.
Well, let's flip that question. What do we do for the next biennium to make sure that this isn't going to be an issue in 24 months?
Mr. Chair, we're doing two things to try to fix this. One is, as I explained, to add additional contracts people to my division so that we can process them more quickly. Right. The second is we are working at putting together templates or boilerplates for each of the programs so that our hope is that we're going to have a standard contract for each one of those different types of programs that would really speed up the process. And finally, actually, we're looking to get exemptions from the Attorney General's office on some. So, for example, if we've agreed to a boilerplate with the AG's office and that's all we're using for a contract, we would like to be exempted from their review in certain cases. So we're looking at doing each of those steps to try to fix this.
Well, I would just share really quick through all the discussions we've had up until now, the one message that has been hit home to me is if I come home with nothing, just make sure these contracts get processed at an efficient rate.
Mr. Chair, we really hear you, and we agree with that because, I'll be honest, it's been something that's been concerning me quite a bit. Truthfully, I think I was part of the reason for the delay because when I took over managing the division about a year ago, we were down to the two people, and I decided to wait for a while till I had a better understanding of what we needed. And once I figured that out and realized we need more bodies, we have worked hard to get three more positions put back into contracts so that we're back up to that 5 FTE level. But, no, it's a very legitimate problem, and we really want to fix it. It's one of our top priorities for this next biennium.
Just really quick, so the committee's clear. We're in the budget document, it doesn't look like we're adding FTE. We're actually reducing. So where are those new positions coming from?
Mr. Chair, fair enough. Three of the positions, one of them was actually already a contracts position, but had been kept vacant. The person had left the department. I kept that open and vacant for several months because I wanted to determine what the needs were before I filled it. Filled that with a manager about 7 or 8 months ago. Following that, we realized we really needed to get back up to the 5 FTE, so we did two things. For one of those positions, we reassigned the duties, and a person who was a manager in another division left the department, and we decided to take her duties, split them among the existing managers, basically adding a little bit to our workload, so that we could take that position and put it in contracts. finally, as I explained a little bit earlier, the internal auditor position. Once that person took another job, we decided we actually had more of a need for a contracts person than an internal auditor, largely based on DASA's recommendations that we really could contract externally, and that because we're a small agency, we probably don't need a full-time internal auditor, so it might be a better use of funds to contract. Also, DAS recommended we do that because they thought it might be more objective to have an external contractor. So on DAS's recommendation, we decided to move that internal auditor position to a contract position, freeing up one more FTE, which we then moved into contracts. So sorry for the story, because it's a little different answer in each of the three cases, but we've juggled and reassigned positions to try to increase our contracts folks.
So who's lost their job in all this? I'm trying to figure out how you went from 116 down to 114. I'm on page 011. I'm trying to figure out who's gone.
Mr. Chair, my understanding actually is that this that those numbers are reflective of the loss of the tourism division, there were 10 positions, the FTE that was assigned to the department in the biennium, because of the timing, the phase out of the timing, was just over 2. So that gets you, I believe, to the appropriate number.
The last FTE question I have is, you have a web page position on your organizational chart.
Okay.
Communications.
Mr. Chair, what's your question specifically?
What's the position do?
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair, we do have a staff person in our communications division who we consider the webmaster for the department and does the job of keeping both our internal website as well as external current. She also does quite a bit of work with Brand Oregon in helping them get their materials together. Each website that we're involved with, or a lot of our marketing materials, she reviews and finalizes. So basically, she's a member of the communication staff, helping to make sure that a lot of our materials that go out have a consistent look and theme, specifically connected to Brand Oregon.
Is the position mistitled?
Mr. Chair, I don't know exactly what you're looking at. You said it's on the website. It sounds like it might be, but for purposes of that function, we just want people to know that we do have someone who is managing our website, so that's probably how she was referenced on the site.
Okay.
I can tell, Mr. Chair, by your expression, I didn't answer the question.
Well, you did,
I'm sorry.
But you did, and I truly don't want to poke anyone in the eye on this. But your webpage needs to be updated.
Mr. Chair, you are absolutely right, and here is why it hasn't been yet. The state, specifically under the direction of the governor's office, has been redesigning all the websites
so that
they look consistent. We are in, I think, they're phasing in agencies and groups to that new look, and we weren't in the first group to be phased in, and we didn't want to put a lot of time into our website until we're phased as part of that project. And it's my understanding is that's just coming up. So you are quite right. We've listed a lot of things we want corrected in the website, but decided to wait until we were phased in so that we're not duplicating our efforts.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we were on page 10. Again, we were just talking about, you'll note that the department has seen page 11, seen significant staffing reductions in the last few biennia. Not shown on this document is that the department had more than 150 positions and FTE in the 95-97 and 1997-99 biennia. In addition, the staffing figures in the 2001-03 column don't entirely tell the story, as the department did begin to hold a number of positions vacant during special session reductions, and while they continue to officially be on the books, they held those vacant both for cost savings during special session reductions and in expectation of the 03-05 biennial budget. You will note that for the most part, the demands on the department, as you've heard over the last week or so, have not decreased commensurate with the staffing reductions. However, the department has instead attempted to deliver services in different and more efficient ways. You will also note that general funds for arts is approximately half, or less than half, actually, of the 1999-2001 actuals. And while the lottery funds budget has grown here somewhat significantly, you need to note that the increase is largely represented by the increase in debt service requirements, not increased staffing or program funding. In fact, as you've heard some of the managers talk to you about over the last few weeks, for the most part, and again, there are some roll-up issues here, for the most part, the operations division and the community development or organ development fund have remained at the same levels over the last couple of biennia. The exception for the community development fund would be the policy packages that are brought forward to you in the governor's recommended budget, both the innovation economy package and the partial restoration of regional and rural funds. Debt service, however, is continuing to grow. The growth in other funds' non-limited activity is largely representative of increased revolving loan activity related to infrastructure funds, and again, the 2005-07 level would include the bond funds that are related to the Industrial Lands Initiative or the approximately $60 million of lottery bonds that are recommended in the governor's proposed budget. On page 7, we talk about some major policy issues. Just as you are all obviously facing very difficult budget decisions, the governor's recommended budget included difficult choices regarding investment in this program area. For the most part, as we've discussed, department funding was held at 2003-05 levels. Some decisions were made to strategically invest in activities that would create and retain jobs and sustainable business in order ultimately to grow the Oregon economy. For example, the Innovation Economy and Commercialized Research Funds, both $7 million and $2 million lottery funds, respectively, the Industrial Lands Initiative, $60 million in lottery bond proceeds, partial restoration of regional and rural investment funds, that's just $3.5 million additional funds, which I believe brings that program to $10.5 million, or approximately half of what it was at its heyday, so to speak. Cultural trust grants and operations were also increased in the budgets to match revenue expectations for the biennium. And you've heard over the last few days from a number of the department's managers and from program partners. It's also important to understand the context in which the governor's recommended budget was developed. On page 13, and as we've discussed over the last several days and will be of absolutely not new news to you, there's ongoing debate about what the role of the Economic Development Department is in the state of Oregon. It's nothing new this session or, frankly, probably new this decade. And depending on the particular lens that any individual, any business, or any locality is looking at a program, the perspective is likely to be different. That said, the 2003 legislature unanimously, or nearly unanimously, since some folks were not actually on the floor to vote that day, passed House Bill 2011, which focused the Economic Development Department on promoting job development. The department's activities in the current biennium and the governor's recommended budget for 2005-07 were focused by that legislation, which included direction to assist existing companies that desire to expand, assist companies that desire to develop new products, promote commercialization of technology developed at colleges and universities, and you'll see the policy package that was brought forward related to that, recruit businesses and targeted industries to locate in Oregon. Again, the policy package for industrial lands relates somewhat to that. Provide assistance to communities for local economic development efforts. Again, why you see the partial restoration of regional and rural funds. And then to develop infrastructure for communities that support local economic development activities. Again, I think there's somewhat of a tie there to the industrial lands package and some of the ongoing activities in the other program areas. Page 14, just for wrap-up, makes note of some of the technical issues related to the department's budget.
Senator Johnson.
I want to just stop for a second and go back to the description that you've just given. And these are all things that many of us that are in this room voted to support. All of us, I think, can look at this and see different things. And so my curiosity is in trying to figure out how the agency conforms to the direction of House Bill 2011. And you may be the wrong person to ask, but you're just the one that's read this to us. And adheres to the legislative guidance. And still is able to give the professional thinking of the agency to the discharge of these programs, put sideboards on what, for example, developing infrastructure for communities that supports local economic development efforts. That's about as wide
right.
as it can be. And I'm just trying to figure out how does... It seems like everybody with a spear is hunting in this agency. And where do we find the discipline to say what these things mean with more specificity so that we have a more targeted approach to our work? Because while this is still a jaw-dropping amount of money for a total budget, needs are going unmet and people are leaving disappointed.
Mr. Chair and just a second, Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, sorry, Lynn, not to
quite talk
to me. Let me give you my sort of budget analyst response to that question. And I think you're right. There are probably a number of different responses to that. And as I mentioned, depending on the particular lens that you're looking at those requirements from, what your background is, both in economic development and in other areas, you're going to have a different answer. The department this biennium did work on putting together a strategic plan. They worked with a number of partners, a number of other agencies, with the governor's office, and I believe with some legislative members, although I think that's probably exactly what Lynn is dying to talk about over here, so I'll let her do that in a moment. That strategic plan focused the department's execution action, so to speak, in the current biennium, and provided a lens for them to request policy packages, et cetera, for the 0507 biennium. During the budget development process, then the governor's office and the budget management division weighed in on sort of their perspective on what these particular directives meant and how they played against what the department had done both in their strategic plan and in the request that they had brought forward for their initial budget proposal. And some of those things fell off the board because of funding restrictions, resource allocation that would have been much higher than we felt was applicable to this program area, and frankly, return on investment in a couple of areas. And the things that we did additional investments or recommended additional investment in were sort of the governor's interpretation along with the department of these particular directives. Now, I'm not attempting to be facetious or anything with the next point that I'm going to make, but to some degree, we have made a recommendation, and the committee is attempting to look at that with your particular lens and determine whether or not you agree with how the governor's office and the agency have interpreted that or not. And I think we've, the department and the governor's office, along with budget management, have attempted to provide some of the performance measure information and other types of information that will, for lack of a better description, attempt to bring you sort of into our perspective and to believe, so to speak, what we believed when we were putting that budget together. And to the extent that we did a good job or not, you'll be brought along with that or not. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, no, that was a very good answer. Thank you, Cora. And actually, the work plan that Cora referenced is in your book. We gave it to you as part of the Phase 2 materials. It's under the operational tab. And as the staff person primarily responsible for working with all the different groups to put it together, let me just tell you that what it does is gives an overview statement of the status of Oregon's economy as of December 1 of last year when this plan was adopted. And gives you an overview of what the different groups involved are doing, including cities, counties, business partners, associations, other agencies. And then the final piece of the work plan really details actual steps that each of those groups are taking to try to meet the goals that were presented in House Bill 2011. I will tell you candidly, I have one concern about the plan. I think it's still trying to be all things to all people. It's very difficult when you're given a charge as large as what we were given in House Bill 2011 to know how to limit that. So I share the concern that we need to continue to see what pieces we can do most effectively, because I'm a little worried about our ability to really carry out that entire plan. Final thing I would say about that is it was formally adopted December 1st by the Joint Transportation, Trade, and Economic Development Committee. So that was the process that the plan went through, and that is the plan that right now is the guidance for the agency.
Mr. Chair, would you allow a couple more questions? Was the plan formally adopted by the commission?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, yes, it was, by our commission before we took it to the Joint Transportation, Trade, and Economic Development Committee, yes. They both formally adopted it.
And I guess more a rhetorical question than anything else, and that is, when does this body figure out that a plan's a plan and that it's been through certain steps along the way? I certainly don't know the answer to that, and it seems to me that that's going to be one of the dilemmas facing us as we wrestle with this budget. But what I wanted to get on the record was that you have had a process by which you sought the input, I presume, of counties, sought the input of cities, all of the people that filled this room during the course of the last week and offered opinions. And I guess the further question would be, when do the people that were at the table say, I stood up and said, a plan's a plan?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, interesting question. Yes, we did have a number of meetings with different stakeholder groups to get buy-in to the plan. Part of the concern, though, again, that I think we have is that each of those groups looked at their own piece. And it's difficult to get all of those folks together and say, okay, it's this broad. We probably only have the staffing to do this much. Which pieces do we let go of? And that was a very difficult discussion, and I'm not sure we're all the way there yet, and probably I'm hoping we continue to refine exactly what we'll focus on as we go into next biennium.
One last question, Mr. Chair.
Please.
And at what point does the professional staff inside the agency exercise the discipline to say we can't do this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that's a great question. That has been a problem, I think, or have noticed at least in the 10 years I've been with the department, is that it's very hard for us to say no. And I think it is because our statutory guidance is so broad that we're expected to do a lot of things that are difficult to do with the number of bodies we have. We are trying to be more focused and to say no, but it's difficult to do with a charge as broad as what the department has. It's a good question.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I would add to that I think they're starting to get some guidance or some help, so to speak, from outside parties. I think the decisions that were made during the governor's process helped to focus them. The initial agency request, again, this is my personal perspective as a budget analyst for the department. I think the initial agency request would have continued in some areas, being, again, more of that all things to all people, trying to please probably more of the groups of stakeholders than frankly, the fiscal resources that are available in the state right now would have allowed. And the decisions that the Budget and Management Division and the Governor's Office went through in order to bring a proposal forward to you helped to provide some of that focus in a couple of key areas that we believed had the specific return on investment that would help us get to a better place moving forward and hopefully bring, I mean, not to get way out there, but obviously the intent of economic development or one of the intents of economic development in the state is to bring us into a budgetary arena that we've got revenues that are obviously, not at the level that they are right now. So I think that the department is being somewhat focused and, you know, helping with that. You cannot be all things to all people in all programs from some outside groups. And I would offer that the questions that you're proposing and that other legislative members are bringing forward to the department are attempting to do that as well.
Thank you. Thank you for your latitude, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I want to continue on this communication, but I think it's inappropriate to not have this communication without the director up at the table, and I don't know if you'd be willing to come up and join us. Senator Carter and then Representative Avakian.
Then I want to ask another
How involved is the commission with you guys?
I'm sorry.
How involved is the commission?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, the commission formally is involved, and I try to advise them on an ongoing basis. I, for example, the chairman and I talked this morning about three or four issues that are out there, and I just wanted to kind of fill him in. It didn't take any decision on the part of the commission, but I wanted them to be aware of certain issues that are out there. I do that with the chairman probably once every 2 weeks, something like that, 2 to 3 weeks.
And I'm going back to the plan that Lynn was talking about.
That's right.
Because, Mr. Chairman, what troubles me about this process is one where, does the governor appoint the commissioners?
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, the answer is yes.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, what bothers me, and because I know your frustration. I know Betsy's frustration. What frustrates me most of all is that the legislature doesn't get it, that we keep doing this. If you go back to 2001, there are different sets of directions. You're in 2003. You got different directions. 2005. We want to give them different directions. It seems to me that you need to call the governor in to talk about these kind of issues in terms of directions for economic development in the state. And we need to take a mirror and look at ourselves in terms of what we're asking this department to do. Because they're broad because you have 36 different counties in this state. And they're broad because you have a commission that the governor has appointed that also gives them direction. And my question to us as legislators, who do they take directions from? And so it creates the kind of environment that, you know, I can see if this department really, truly acts schizophrenic and went batty on us one day, I will know why. Because we don't give them, we don't allow them enough time, it appears to me, for a level of consistency. Because all of us want our fingerprints on from year to year that we're in. And at what point do we as a legislature, this is a question to us, at what point do we as a legislature allow the Department of Economic Development to get some research under its belt to prove that a program has 5 years to come to fruition or to be able to carry out any theories or methodologies that can be proven and they come back and report on us? We change it before they're able to do it.
Representative Avakian.
Well, that was a perfect segue. You posed the question that I actually would like to get an answer to. You, Ms. Parker, had mentioned twice that the department receives help from outside sources, which begs the question to me, were you, and the question is not just directed to you, but were you talking about us? Were you talking about corporations around Oregon? Were you talking about other political positions? I'd like to have some more specificity as to what the process is with regard to who is leading you and who is making decisions.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, specific to my comments, and then I'll let the department certainly weigh in. I think I was specifically referring to the guidance from the governor's office, from budget and management. Those obviously are colored, so to speak, by what we hear, what we see with respect to return on investment, what we hear from constituencies, what we hear from the legislative body. The legislative fiscal office obviously is a part of that equation. And yes, to a certain extent, the legislative body is part of that, both during the interim via emergency board actions, review, for example, of the Strategic Reserve Fund report and the sorts of allocations or awards that were made from that report, or from that funding source. The joint, and I'm not going to get the official name of the committee right, but the Joint Economic Development and Trade Committee that met during the interim that approved the department's work plan. So those are the sorts of outside sources that I was referring to, and the department certainly can speak more specifically to.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ekin, the way that I interpret the question is I think that the department has and the director has five constituencies that he continually has to answer to on an ebb and flow basis. It is the governor and the governor's office and the governor's staff and the different departments. It is the legislature and the legislature, different departments and different oversight there. It is my own department to make sure that the department is lined up in order to achieve what we want to do. It is the businesses of Oregon themselves, which are located and very varied, but sometimes not located in Oregon. And so you are you're responding and listening to what the businesses need themselves. And then finally, I think not a traditional constituency, it is an acute awareness of the urban-rural split, if you will, and being very, very sensitive to what some needs are outside of the Willamette Valley and other places, too, that you're very sensitive to. All five of those, I believe, are conduits of information that flow back and forth to help form where you need to go.
And then, if I may,
please.
Then the second part of my question is, at to borrow the phrase, at what point does the buck stop? And there may not be an answer to that right now, as Senator Carter described, but I'd like to know your perspective on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ekin, it seems to me that there are two elements that buck stops, if you will. One of them is the budgetary process itself. You need to usually allocate money in order to achieve goals. And so you need a plan together, first of all, a vision, in my opinion, and a plan together in order to satisfy, for the most part, those five constituencies. If you don't satisfy those five constituencies, you're going to get whacked right on the side of the head big time, and you're going to hear people all over the place saying, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. So you need to be aware of those five constituencies. Second of all, and that plan has to respond to those five constituencies, in my opinion. That usually needs execution, usually needs money. All the way down the line. Then you usually need to do the accountability side to see how you've accomplished all of that too. So it seems to me that those are the pieces that you need to put in place in order to get there. It starts with the budget. It starts with the vision and it starts with the budget. And so we are at that junction right now because we're not going to be able to do the innovative economy without a budget. We're not going to be able to do the branding without the budget. And so the budget, in my opinion, is part of the vision that we're trying to piece together. And the vision that we have, I believe, is somewhat a reactive budget to what we should have been doing a few years ago and are trying to catch up. Industrial land is an example of that. We should have had the industrial land available, but we haven't. So some of the budget that we're looking at right now is reactive and some of it is proactive, and that is the innovative economy and the branding side of things and other types of things, too. That's the way that I read the budget and the plan of where we are right now.
I'm willing to take a little bit of chewing on this issue, maybe even a pound or so out. But at the same time, I think that mirror turns both ways. And I don't know how to build a bridge, so I turn to Director Warner. I don't know how to run a prison, so I turn to Director Williams. And this committee here doesn't know how to run an economic development department, so we turn to you. And House Bill 2011, I carried House Bill 2011 last session, has 6 points on it. And I think House Bill 2011, excuse me, has set you up to fail. I think we're expecting you to do way too much with the resources that you're provided. I think we're asking you to do work that is beyond the scope of the state of Oregon. Committee, I remind you that we've got $110 million in lottery, 55 of which is committed for debt service. So now we're asking this department with half that to go and assist existing companies. How many existing companies are there in Oregon? A lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, from my perspective, 160 of them matter. 160 of them matter here, 160 down the line. Trying to help companies who desire to develop new products. How many companies out there want to do that? Quite a few. How many want to promote commercialization of technology? Quite a few. How many companies out there are available to be recruited to come into Oregon? Quite a few. The point is, we've got $55 million. We can't do everything for everyone. We have promises on the table. It's important for this committee to remember that. We have promises on the table. Mm-hmm. We need to go out and remind some folks, if we're not going to keep those promises, we need to tell them. I'm gonna say a case in point. Go look at the statutory language. The Ports Division is a statutorily created division within economic development.
That's right.
If we're not going to do ports, let's not do ports. But let's not be carrying this legislation forward as an obligation of the state of Oregon and not have the resources to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to move in the direction of innovation, I'm there. But I don't want to have 18 promises on the table that we can't keep. It's time to focus. It's time to take a look at those things we can accomplish, put our resources, our effort, our capital, our knowledge into that. But the notion of trying to be everything to everyone, I just don't see it. Senator Johnson.
Well, I certainly agree with what you and Senator Carter have said, and so we have committee members in agreement. Where do you go from here? Where's the King's X? Because even as we're sitting here and have for the last week, there have been people in the room with issues. They want money. They want stuff. And what I'm trying to figure out is how, in the interest of good policy, reflecting what both Senator Carter and Representative Smith have very clearly articulated, where do we zero it back? Where do we avoid the temptation to just keep doing more of the same with different names? Or where do you run through the run of statutes and say these are the things we shouldn't do, couldn't do, have done and have success, have done and have not done well in? Where do we get to that point where we draw a line and say it's not just heaping on more of the same? Because while I agree with Senator Carter, I would respectfully disagree in that it hasn't just been in the past couple of biennial we've done this. We've been doing it for a couple of decades.
Yeah.
And I share my colleague's concern that it should come as no surprise that the agency doesn't know what its charge is anymore. I don't think we do. But we're engaged in a process right now, perfectly willing to carve off more little pieces of what you're doing for parochial reasons. And I don't know how, to advance good policy, we simply say we can't keep doing the same.
Senator Morris.
Thank you. Lest we get too carried away whipping ourselves, let me point out something I think is very positive, and it was very collaborative in a large work group with the governor and the OECD staff and OCED board to bring forward the innovation technology, Senate Bill 830.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an excellent piece of work, and it capitalizes on tremendous investments in capital that we have within our universities. It's a theme that the governor has promoted consistently, and it's one that we need to find a way to execute because it does have a thread that will strengthen our economy, and it'll weave a very strong fabric. I'm totally convinced of that. All you have to do is go into these universities and talk to these research professors and just get a little bit of a glimpse of the things that they're working on and what they're doing. It can be a tremendous driver. So I think in terms of, you know, what's our strategy, where are we going, Senate Bill 838, I'd also mention 853, the University Venture Development Fund, to capitalize with grants through this valley of death. So I think there are some good things we've got on the table here. We just need to roll up our sleeves and move forward, knowing full well we can't do everything, obviously. But there are some things we can do well, and that university technology is one we can do well. Now, we're way behind the curve in terms of other states, but we have to start somewhere. So I'm kind of enthused about where we can go. We just need to get a common mind in this body that we're going to do something.
How do we, let me throw this and I'll go to the other two members. How do we then institute tough love on those folks we can't help? Because as chair of this committee, I get emails and letters and phone calls from all over the state of everyone who wants something, and we don't have the resources to do it. So this committee, if we're going to go in the direction of Senate Bill 838, and I'm not opposed to that, I think it makes tremendous sense, but we have to be willing to institute some tough love somewhere else to say we've only have 112 or so employees, and we only have so much money and so much capital, human and financial, to do so much. And so this committee's got to be willing to step up and say, we're no longer doing this, this, and this. We're now going this direction. And I think that's something we need to discuss. Senator Berger.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's just so easy to understand it. I understand what Senator Carter is talking about and the direction. And maybe that's the wrong way to do it. Maybe we shouldn't be doing that, because maybe we are jumping around from biennium to biennium about where we think is the best. Everybody at the table would probably have a different idea about where they would want to go. I could just lay out a great plan, and it would certainly be all about my district and the people in my area that send me to Salem. But as long as we have unemployment, and as long as we need to have job creation, people are going to be beating up on the department expecting miracles to happen. Once we have a job for everybody and we don't have anybody that really is out looking for work, you would be all heroes, and nobody would be beating on your door at all. Oregon has gone into this recession period, and through no fault of your department, that's where we were, but because that's what you do, that's what people look to. And the department, in my opinion, has been by far a click up under the direction of Marty Brantley, and I want to say that publicly, because I have dealt with this department for over 14 years. So I'm not just talking about somebody that just started dealing with the department. And in the last few years, I can see a whole different viewpoint. But it might be that the department, rather than trying to please the legislature or to please this body in any way, needs to have a certain amount of money that this legislature has available to it to give to you. And then you figure out how you can be heroes. In other words, if we're going to be the ones that are going to say, we want you to do all of this, but we're not going to fund you, we don't have enough money for that, but you accomplish it, I think we're still going to be going around with the dog chasing his tail. It would seem to me that as a department, as people with your expertise, I mean, I'm looking at Doris sitting back here with years of experience, Mike back here with years of experience in the department, that people know what you can do for the kind of money that we're able to give you. And I think that's our position to say how much money this department can have. In fairness to everybody else, this is what you can do. Then you have to decide who gets tough love and who doesn't in order to create jobs in Oregon. And until you do that, I think you're going to continue to have every legislative session. After all, we're a citizen body. We're elected. We're sent here. We all have our ideas of the way it should run. And I think that's a mistake. But I do think that the limitations on money have to be there, just as a way of being physically responsible in balancing a budget. So.
Senator Johnson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for letting us
spend. Mr. Chair, if I could just chime in a little bit. I think that there's lots of ways to improve and to grow forward, both in vision and in execution. But I think that we are making some pretty good progress in a lot of those areas, too. And it is due to a lot of the citizens who work very, very hard on a regional basis and others to make that happen. A lot of it is volunteer. A lot of it is nonprofit. And we get, just like you, lots of advice. But we are making some pretty good progress also in the innovation piece, I think, is a great step forward. The industrial lands piece, you know, we had to do that and have to continue to do that. That's jobs. The Yahoo announcement of a day or two ago, you know, is an example of the fact that we really are rounding, in my opinion, a lot of corners and people are recognizing that Oregon's a pretty good viable place to work. So we do have a hugely ambitious schedule in front of us. And that is a very fair concern to say, are we trying to do too much? There is a place for a debate as to saying, should economic development and community development be linked together? That is a fair philosophical discussion to have. But that being said, we also have made some good progress due to a lot of good people. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're really welcome. Can we proceed to... does Deanne want to come up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got just one page left on mine.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. And primarily it's to introduce Deanne. So on page 14, again, the department has no specific fee or revenue issues, just the sort of resource allocation thing, items that we actually just had a conversation about. There's a minor technical adjustment that we'll bring forward to you related to Senate Bill 838 that Senator Morse discussed earlier. And finally, we wanted to talk about the Community Development Fund allocation process. Actually, Senator Verger touched on this, although I don't know that she was intending to touch on it. Right now, the way that the budget is structured for the department, again, if you go back to the pie, and Deanne's going to talk to you about it here in a minute, Community Development Fund is the largest portion of the budget, and the appropriation level that you look at is exactly that higher level, an operations section, an arts commission budget, film and video, lottery debt service, and then a large community development pie. The portion of that community development pie that is revolving loan funds has been fairly well explained. The lottery portion of that, the roughly 50-some million that the chair mentioned today, is on your part simply a line item allocation at that higher level. By statute, and I've referenced it here, 285A, 227, by statute it is the Economic Development Commission that actually allocates those funds to the specific programs relating to the governor's budget level and or the legislatively adopted budget level. And Deanne is actually going to talk to you about that process.
Could you run the number one more time? 285A what?
227, I believe.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Before we get into Deanne's presentation, Cora, go to the back page of your document.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to understand. I'm looking now at the Oregon Business Development Fund. And I just want to understand, in the 01-03, the commission had an allocation plan that had nothing for that.
Excuse me, which fund were you referring to?
Oregon Business Development Fund.
I'm going to actually let Deanne respond to that because this is exactly what she's going to talk to you about.
Okay, but I just want to understand, rather than getting into the elements, in the 01-03 commission allocation, that $6,500,000 was not included. Then in the 03-05, it appears that the commission made a recommendation after their deliberations, and we've just been joined by one of the commissioners, Commissioner Hyde. So the commission then in 03-05 deliberated and said, we think that we ought to put $6,500,000 of lottery bond proceeds.
Correct.
And in the build-up to the governor's recommended budget, at some point in the budget deliberations, the governor looked at this and said, this is not a priority choice that I'm going to make, and excluded it.
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, actually, you're partially correct, and there's actually a missing element there. The $6.5 million that you reference, you're exactly right. That was an additional $6.5 million during the 03-05 biennium lottery fund proceeds that the Commission chose to put into the Oregon Business Development Fund. Those were funds that were put there to recapitalize that fund. So the choice to not put any additional funds into that fund in 05-07 was simply because the fund has been recapitalized. Now it's revolving, and there's enough funds left from that $6.5 million for revolving activity for a while. So at some point in the future, there may be the need to recapitalize it again.
Thank you. That was very helpful. What I'm circling back around really is a question that was already asked, and I'm not sure I heard the answer. And that's to the degree that the commission, and it might be particularly fortuitous that Commissioner Hyde is here, to what degree the commission is actually wrestling with the prioritizations, the deliberations with respect to recommendations to the agency head that would then roll up to recommendations to the governor and finally to the legislature for review during the legislative session. And I'm trying to understand the level of engagement that the commission has given the wide breadth of their expertise and geographic disbursement.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that is exactly the process that Deanne is going to talk
great
to you about.
Great. Then I'll be
and
quiet and
I
let Deanne talk.
Step aside and let the commissioner come forward later if necessary.
Before we get there, I want to digress back a little bit and look at some of the FTE. Can you folks turn to page 162 in this book? That's okay. Explain for the right there.
Oh, I'm you know for the okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to find something additional. Sorry.
I'm looking, and then also page 173. That's the comparison. In the 03-05 biennium, we had an industry cluster strategy manager, and then I see that in the 05-07 biennium, we don't have that position. What happened?
Mr. Chair, for that position specifically, and I'm trying to remember because we've moved positions around again to try to cover the new direction under House Bill 2011, but they're pointing at me. That is the position that we use to fill our economist three. We have an economist on staff. And we're specifically focusing on the innovation economy with that piece. So we're trying to redirect those staff to cover the industry clusters, and rather than having a single person do that, we're trying to ask that group of folks to cover that. And Cora's signaling at me, so I will turn it over to her.
Sorry, Lynn. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think if you look at page 173, the position actually remains, or 172, excuse me, the position actually is still there. It's been moved to that innovation economy section, but the industry cluster strategy manager, same position number, same level, is still within the department, is simply moved again based on Lynn's comments to a different section, so to speak, and that's under the innovation economy.
So is that position now going to focus on innovation?
Basically, and this is again one of those areas that we provided some of that focus that Senator Johnson spoke to earlier. Industry cluster activity has been focusing a couple different areas in the department in the past, and I think during 03-05 execution was primarily in the market development area. Mm-hmm. And based on that direction and sort of the strategy moving forward, those activities are now going to be primarily focused in the innovation area. And again, that goes to that broader description of what innovation is, and that innovation is not singularly focused at high-tech development, for example. I think you heard about some of the food manufacturing companies, one that came and talked to you, and different definitions of how innovation focuses into some of those industry cluster specific areas. So it simply is focusing in a different area, but that manager is still within the department.
Okay. And then again on page 162 under the innovation economy, there's a research analyst. I assume that's the same person on page 172, just to retitle to a program liaison.
That's correct.
Okay. on page 162, there's a Portland small business rep. What happened to that position?
Mr. Chair, that was a limited duration position, which naturally falls off of the budget.
What was the function of that position?
Mr. Chair, we did have a staff person in the Portland office working part-time with some of the small business entities. And actually, it's unfortunate Senator Carter left, because I think that that person's worked with her and with a number of the different small business associations in Portland. So that was the specific function.
What were
they doing? Mr. Chair, I would need to get back to you on her specific work plan in terms of what she was doing, but overall what she's doing is connecting with those businesses, helping them find resources to pay for their different needs, ensuring that a lot of them have the same types of information and that we're giving them similar information about the state programs, as well as connecting them to each other. It's a networking function primarily, because there are so many different groups, funding opportunities, et cetera, and a lot of what she does is work with those groups to provide that type of information to them.
So that position was funded just for one biennium?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
We missed that meeting. Senator Johnson.
Well, and again, this goes back to sort of what's the direction of the agency in terms of why, and I don't say this with any disparagement to any of my urban colleagues, but why would Portland be deserving of having that liaison function when Bend, which is a very dense metropolitan area now, contrary to its trying to hold on to the old rural designation, why shouldn't Bend have gotten somebody discharging that function?
For Albany.
Yeah, we're all me.
Well, there you go.
Mr. struggling.
Mr. Chair and lots of senators. yes, that's a fair question. And I think in terms of this position, the answer is just because there are so many different groups in Portland needing to connect. However, you're quite right. Often we'll respond to where the requests are for help, and if you'd like your own limited duration person, let us know. But that's how that one arose, was because that person had a history of working with those groups, and it was determined that it was still a need because there are so many different associations in Portland.
I'm probably going to poke someone in the eye on this one, but here we go. Can you provide for me and the committee the bill or the budget bill that funded that position? I'd like to see that.
Mr. Chair, I believe that was a permanently financed position during the interim, so administratively created, but I will have to go back and look at the research behind that. And
the e-board probably didn't approve that.
Excuse me?
Wouldn't the e-board then have approved that position?
Not necessarily. If the fund source was available and it was within the general budget parameters that were legislatively adopted.
You guys didn't fund the position without coming to the legislature, I'm sure.
If position funding is available in the department's budget, there's a permanent financing process, and I don't have the statute in front of me that the Department of Administrative Services has the authority to reallocate position funding and or create administrative limited duration positions. And I can get that that statutory reference for you.
Senator Johnson.
This is a perfect example, though. We went from this rather high-minded, lofty, philosophical discussion now down trying to micromanage your agency again, because, frankly, the people that are sitting here could be, I think, legitimately miffed that a decision was made inside the agency somewhere that you needed this specific liaison position for Portland. Mm-hmm. And all of us looking around saying, how'd that work out? Mm-hmm. That's the dilemma, and I don't necessarily solicit a response, just saying this is what's wrong with not having a widely agreed upon plan. And basically, I think your invitation, your provocative invitation by funding a position pointed to Portland that has all the rest of us scratching our heads trying to figure out where we get lost.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, Senator Johnson, this position is limited duration position, aimed specifically at minority businesses. And so a lot of the contact that this person does on a limited basis has been aimed at small business and minority positions in the Portland market. The person is particularly qualified for that, works with a lot of the people that Onami Group and other groups in the Portland market in order to accomplish the goals, if you will. So that's the that was the purpose of the decision.
So why not come to the e-board with that?
Well, I'm not sure, again, how the funding mechanism was started, and so I don't know where we are on that or how it started. Anyway, that was the purpose.
How did we decide that a Portland small business rep was more important than a contractor to help get contracts out?
The position has been was there when I came in, so I don't know how that was started.
I'm just moving chairs.
Share with this committee. We just heard that one of the big issues that we need to adjust on is getting contracts out in a timely manner. And I shared with the panel that the one message I've heard from home is if I come home with nothing, make sure contracts get out in a timely manner. There was concurrence on that, and now I'm finding out that rather than fund a contractor, we're funding a Portland small business rep.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I believe that this was a position. You'll recall that the department went through a refocused process during the last budget process. That focus, again, was based on some of the same sort of conversation and discussion during the last biennium and was what led to some fairly significant additional reductions in the 0305 budget. This position, I believe, had been a permanent position in the department's budget that had been legislatively reviewed and approved at a point in the past. It was one of the positions that was slated for elimination based on the refocused budget that was brought forward. During the execution phase of the biennium, the department determined that the need for that position was still fairly significant within, as the director has indicated. And I believe that the limited duration position was funded with temporary service dollars that, again, were legislatively approved. While the line item is not specifically approved, it's part of the total budget that is legislatively approved by this body. Those temporary service dollars are what were used to fund this position carrying forward in this capacity during the biennium. As far as why it's not wasn't brought forward to the emergency board, it necessarily, by the process, has to be approved by the Department of Administrative Services and based on some of the direction from the Ways and Means process during the 2003 session, the Legislative Fiscal Office now receives copies of those permanent financing plans and administrative limited duration position establishments. There's nothing legally, and I'm not trying to say this to be argumentative, but there's nothing that forces that sort of a position creation that already has a budget basically behind it. A temporary services line item has already been adopted by this body. There would be no formal legislative action for the emergency board to take. Certainly, if this body wanted those sorts of documents to be brought forward for reporting purposes or whatever to emergency boards in the future, that certainly is a decision that the body can make. But set on historical precedents and the fact that there's not actually a legislative action that we would be requesting from the emergency board, that's why it was not brought forward in that venue. It was, however, as I mentioned, copies of those materials are provided to your professional technical staff and obviously are, you know, included in budget documents. That's how we got into the discussion. You're looking at it in front of you, et cetera. So I hope that's responsive. That's as good as I can do for you this afternoon.
Thank you. Representative Abakian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it was partially responsive. I'm hearing two things from the committee. One is what you just explained, mm-hmm. the technical process of the money.
Mm-hmm.
The second sounds to me more like the same old mission and decision-making points that we talked about an hour ago, in that a decision was made to focus in a particular geographic area with a particular position, and we haven't heard anything about how that decision was made, who made the decision, why that specific area was targeted as opposed to other areas.
Oh.
And I guess I'm hearing some discomfort on the committee's part with respect to that piece of this.
Right.
I think what we all realize is one small part of your entire scope. But I think it's an example that prompted, you know, some discussion because those elements seem to be missing for us.
Right. And Mr. Chair, Representative Avakian, with respect to this specific position, and I apologize for not bringing this to light when it was first raised. I believe this was a position that had been previously legislatively reviewed and adopted. The department had looked at it, had believed that it made sense at the time to eliminate and its refocus. As time went forward, they determined that no, in fact, there was still a need there, and because it wasn't, so to speak, it wasn't a new position that was being funded. It was new technically because the actual position had been eliminated from the legislatively approved budget, but the function of it was not a new function, so to speak. It was something that had gone through the review process in the past. It was not a new community coming saying we need something. So with that sort of history and then with temporary services dollars available to fund it, the decision was made to move forward. But you're right. This is a minor element of the budget, and it goes to that same ebb and flow and that sort of pull that we have on flexibility for the department to make certain decisions and the commission to make certain decisions and the desire by the legislature to be at a lower level in some places in order to manage more from that level. And there certainly is some pull on both sides there.
Share with the committee why this position is no longer important.
Mr. Chair.
Before you do that, may I follow up,
please?
One? I just want to make sure my point wasn't misunderstood. I'm not so sure that this committee wants to micromanage you. It seems like it, given what the last couple weeks have looked like. I think what the committee wants is reassurance that you're micromanaging yourself in a way that says we don't have to. Mm-hmm. And that piece was missing in this little discussion about this one small position in Portland. That piece, I think, was missing from you to us, which is what sparked all of these questions about what's going on, is we don't, I think, understand how you're managing that one particular decision. And so I don't know, I don't want to speak for the whole committee, but that's where I think we're coming from.
Point well taken.
Senator Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I agree, and it is difficult for everybody to understand some of the decisions. I think if you take a little bit more of a bird's eye view, when they're looking, you've got the most people in the metropolitan areas, and that has a leaning to how many potential minority businesses are going to have to be the potential of opening minority women. You're not going to look at Coos Bay, Oregon. Okay. And so I think that decision is made from a much higher look at things. I think you can understand what Representative Avakian is saying, is that when you make those decisions, understanding the climate, and all of us understand the climate, we don't have to have anybody tell us the temperature of the water, that you you've got five good reasons for doing it. And when somebody says, why did you choose this? Okay, we chose it. It's on population. It's on the number of minorities. It's on the number of requests. You just have back them up right fast with the reasons that you've done it. And I think that's the reassurance that they're looking for.
Well, we're getting to the end of the hour here. It's 3 p.m. I think we've had a good communication. I apologize we weren't able to get through the entire agenda. Seeing that there's no objection, we're going to adjourn the subcommittee on transportation economic development.